This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Tom Bullock in for Mike Collins. We're going to start today by doing our local news roundup, but we're going to do things a little bit differently because of the news that's been breaking over the week, really, and of course last night. We're going to open our phone lines to hear what you have to say, your thoughts about the shootings this week of two more African-American men by police and the tragic events last night in Dallas where the police were themselves targeted by snipers. We want to hear if you feel safe in Charlotte, if what your views are about police and community relations here in Charlotte, what can be done to improve them, what are the problems that exist. You can give us a call at 704-926-9323. That's 704-926-9323. Or you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. Find WFAE on Facebook or Charlotte Talks on Twitter. Joining me for our roundtable discussion are four journalists, and some of them, well, actually, I think all of them you know very well. We have Eric Frazier, the editorial writer for the Charlotte Observer, and Lisa Worf, assistant news director at WFAE. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Morning.
And also with us are Hillary Byrne, staff writer for the Charlotte Business Journal, and Nick Oxner, investigative reporter with WBTV News. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
So let's begin with the news of the day. Thursday night, hundreds in Charlotte took to the streets to protest the killing of two black men by police, one in Louisiana, the other in Minnesota. And I want to play some audio recorded by the Charlotte Observer of those protests. The first voice you'll hear is a Charlotte police officer, then protester Damon Whitlock, and the chants of others.
If you're made in this immediate assembly, you may be subject to arrest. We're asking you to please move yourself onto the sidewalk.
This genocide has to stop. I'm 27 years old. I have two master's degrees, and I see my people just going through it. I don't like it. I don't like it. I want that. And a lot of the younger people, unfortunately, don't know how to channel that.
If we don't get it,
shut it down.
If we don't get it,
shut it down.
If we don't get it,
shut it down.
Don't shoot. Don't shoot.
Hands up.
Don't shoot.
Hands up.
Now, the protests here were peaceful, but in Dallas, it turned violent when snipers targeted police officers, killing at least five and wounding, I believe now the number is up to seven or eight others, including some bystanders. This leads to a whole lot of questions. It leads to a whole lot of strong feelings. And I want to begin with this simple question for our panel. What do you make of what's happening right now with the killing of African-American men by police and this, you know, tragic event in Dallas? I know, Eric, you've written a lot about this. Let's start with you.
Yeah, it's just a very, very sad, distressing day. This has just been a terrible week. I mean, just starting with the two killings, police-involved killings in Louisiana and Minnesota, and now the killings of these police officers in Dallas. It's just been a horrible week, and I think everybody of goodwill, no matter what your color, no matter whether you're liberal, conservative, Republican, Democrat, we should all be appalled by the events of this week, and we should all people of goodwill, be striving to bring the temperature down, way down, on all of this right now, because the rhetoric on all sides is just very heated, overheated. People's passions and emotions, I think, are beginning to take them past where, you know, where they're take them past where they really need to be, and we're in danger of veering off into some very unproductive, unhelpful, dangerous territory. Where, you know, and we're already there. I mean, anybody who would shoot and target five police officers who are in the middle of crowds of people.
And it was a peaceful protest.
Yeah, a peaceful protest. And I believe, in addition, one protester was shot in the leg. So from my standpoint, what I see what happened in Dallas last night, that was an act of terror. That was a terrorist attack. And there's no other way, you know, there's no other way to get around that fact.
Let's go ahead and take our first call. Bill from Mooresville, you're on the air. Bill, if you can hear us.
Hi. I'm just, you know, I'm appalled by what happened in Dallas. Just sad that it happened, but the perception of the African American community that targeted and assassinated over many, many years, and it is finally coming out because of the cell phone videos and everything else. You know, I'm not a member of that community, but if I were, I would believe with all my heart that most of the killings are the type of almost assassination-like killings. I wish the show, this person had never done this in Dallas because, you know, it doesn't do anything but give the people who believe that the African-American community is inherently bad something to hang their hat on.
All right, Bill, I understand your point. Thank you for your call. Those are pretty strong words. I mean, in defense of the police, I know a lot of them are I mean, as we can see from Dallas, that they're in danger. You know, these are people who are out there in danger. But, you know, there's an interesting piece on Morning Edition today that I heard, which simply said it's not that the number of African-Americans being killed by police is increasing as much as it is that it's just being so well documented.
Yeah,
and I'm curious what everyone thinks about the social media aspect of this.
Well, it certainly puts a face on the statistic.
It's a good way to put it.
For sure. And I know, you know, a lot of people say, hey, you know, this has been happening for a long time. But you have a sense of who these people are, the situation that's leading up. And right, video doesn't always tell the whole story. It doesn't tell the whole story, but it gives you at least a snapshot. And, you know, people read their own conclusions into it. The Washington Post has been keeping a pretty good database on shootings. And they said, you know, this at least earlier this week, Elton Sterling, that was the 122nd black man shot by police this year. And there have been 505 fatalities in all by police and civilians.
Well, we just heard from one caller who understands the anger that the African-American community is facing. I want to turn now to Brad from Charlotte, who is seeing things in a slightly different way. Brad, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
So what do you think?
So I spent 6 years and some stop-loss months on active duty as an Army infantryman, deployed 4 times. We constantly joked with each other. Everybody was from different backgrounds. We were, you know, black, white, Asian, gay, straight, and all of our...
Oh, I think we lost him. If you can call us back, I'd love to finish hearing your thoughts. But instead, let's turn to Taylor in Rock Hill. Taylor, you're on WFAE's Local Roundup.
Hi, good morning. And I think I want to... It's kind of what the gentleman was speaking about before, in that this is a time for peace. And I think watching all this coverage, a lot of people have a tendency to choose a side, whether they want to mourn for the police officers or the black lives that have been lost. But I think it's okay to mourn for both, and you don't necessarily have to choose a side at this point in this argument, and that feeling bad for everyone is okay.
I think it's a fair point. And are you seeing that around you? Are you seeing others just understanding that this whole situation has turned tragic?
I mean, reading some of the like comments on Reddit, I think a lot of people can either try to justify some the violence against police, or they want to defend the police, and there's. This is a time where it can create more polarization, but I think it's important to know that you can be sad and mourn both sides, and this is not a time where we need to pull apart. We all need to come together.
All right, Taylor, thank you for your call, and I just want to remind everyone our phone lines are open this morning for our news roundup. You can call us at 704-926-9323. That's 704-926-9323. You can also reach us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. We're on Facebook and at Charlotte Talks on Twitter. You know, one of the things that was supposed to help calm this situation, as Eric was saying, bring the temperature down a bit, were police body cameras and the footage that they would provide, that this would be some way to, in essence, be more transparent on the interactions between police and civilians. It was supposed to be this calming factor. Where do we stand with police body camera footage here in North Carolina? Nick?
Well, a bill was passed just in the last couple weeks that is now awaiting the governor's signature, the governor's mansion, that would make all police video secret, not just body camera footage, but all video that is used by police, dash camera footage, surveillance video footage. And so there's a great opportunity for Governor McCrory here to take action that would protect transparency and allow videos in situations where there are questions about interactions between police and members of the public to be made public as they were intended to be.
Now, I know, obviously, the last time we did this roundup, you and I had something of a heated debate over this bill, over the use of or the availability of body camera footage. And I still think the promise, the allure of body cameras are that people will see it. And we're still finding obstacles getting to that.
If you recall, I mean, when we the investment that we have made as a society and government in body cameras is in the tens or hundreds of millions of dollars across the country, local, state, federal level. Body cameras are not a cheap technology, nor is the technology that's required to store this body camera footage long term. And so as communities, including here in Charlotte, were investing in that body camera technology, we justified the expenditure of that money on greater transparency. Mm-hmm. So the bill that was passed by the General Assembly just a couple weeks ago and is awaiting the governor's signature is one that literally takes out all transparency from the process unless, under two conditions, one, you can convince a judge to issue an order to release that video, or two, you are in that video, in which case the police chief gets to decide which portions of the video you can see. And that, by no definition, is transparency.
And you don't get a copy of that video.
Correct.
If you're involved.
You just get to
look
at it.
You get a viewing.
Right. And that is absolutely not transparency.
And I think what's also been shown by the events of the last few days is that that law sort of suggests that the legislators felt like they were sort of putting a cordon around this video information when, in fact, we're in a society where video is everywhere.
It's so prevalent.
I mean, if they thought they were sort of walling this off, they don't understand the media environment that we live in, where everybody has a cell phone, everybody's filming everything.
And in this case, in one of the shootings in Minnesota, it was actually live streamed on Facebook, immediate aftermath.
Yeah. In Baton Rouge, they said, one of the officers, correct me if I'm wrong, but the body camera fell off in the shuffle, so they didn't have that.
Right, but there's also dash camera video. There's also surveillance video. So under the North Carolina...
And there's also the other video from the other officers.
Right. And under North Carolina law, none of that... It wouldn't just be protected police information like it currently is, and you'd have to wait, or maybe it wouldn't be released until we've seen a court. None of that video, if that had happened in North Carolina, if this law is signed and that happened in North Carolina, none of that video would be made public. And I think that prompts very grave questions about whether or not that's appropriate use of this technology. I would argue it's not.
Now, we have more phone calls that we would like to get to. Again, we do want to hear from you, especially on a morning like this. We're talking about policing community relations. I mean, it's one of the most difficult issues that we have facing this nation right now. And we'll get to those calls here in a second, but soon we're going to have to take a quick break. So I want to ask a quick final question, which is this. Have we heard anything from the CMPD about any precautions that they are taking after in the wake of Dallas? Has anything come out yet?
Not this morning that I know of.
All right. You're listening to the Local News Roundup here on Charlotte Talks. We'll be back with more phone calls and more comments and continue this discussion. You can reach us at 704-926-9323. And you can also reach us on Charlotte Talks at Charlotte Talks on Twitter.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Charlotte Eye, Ear, Nose, and Throat Associates, providing comprehensive care for infants to seniors, including audiology, allergy, cataracts, diabetic eye care, glaucoma, and sleep medicine. Details at goodsenses.com. Coming up Monday on Charlotte Talks, a look at renewable energy. Using it reduces our reliance on fossil fuels, but in North Carolina, it's also big business. The state ranks third in the country for installed solar capacity and will soon be home to the first utility-scale wind farm in the Southeast. The solar industry has benefited from state tax credits, but those credits have expired, and clean energy advocates worry the growth will slow as a result. The state of renewable energy in North Carolina, that's coming up Monday morning at 9 on Charlotte Talks, here on 90.7 WFAE.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup, the fatal shootings of African-American men by police in Baton Rouge and Minnesota. Congress questions the FBI director about his decision not to recommend charges against Hillary Clinton over an email server, and the latest job numbers.
The News Roundup continues on the Diane Rehm Show from 10 to noon on 90.7 WFAE.
This is Charlotte Talks, local news roundup here on 90.7 WFAE. I'm Tom Bullock in for Mike Collins, and we're going to continue our conversation about police, community relations, given everything that's happened over the last few days and over the last week. And I want to take a call from Wick in Concord. Wick, what are your thoughts?
I'd like to caution everybody to be slow to be the judge and jury with the information that we're getting. You know, it's real easy for us to try the officer or the man who was shot. And in both situations, it's just grievous. I'd hate to think of this poor wife and her daughter who lost a husband and a father, as well as the officer who's facing, you know, criminal charges if he was out of line. But I think that a lot of times we react too hastily. If this story, as I hear it, the man informed the officer that he had a concealed carry permit and was carrying his weapon, to me that tells me that the man was trying to be lawful. So at that point, the officer could have simply went back to his car, called for backup, and waited because, you know, a traffic violation. How important is a traffic violation? Same thing goes, you know, the man might have been a little aggravated or whatever, and he should have been, you know, kept cool. There's a lot of things that could have happened that we don't know as the public. And in our conversations with each other, we need to keep in mind that we should be working together for peace, not just trying to try and convict everybody that does something wrong, or we'd all be in jail. You know?
All right, Wick. Thank you very much for your call. It's a good point. It reminds me, actually, going back to our own police shooting here in Charlotte with Randall Carrick and Jonathan Farrell and the now infamous dash cam footage, which was the crux of the prosecution's case. And it seems these situations oftentimes can be in the eye of a beholder. And that's not me defending anybody. It's just simply a matter of perceptions.
Oh, yeah. That's the classic example where you had video that some people thought clearly showed, you know, improper action on the behalf of the officer, Randall Carrick, and other people thought clearly showed that he shot in self-defense at a guy who was rushing into him. You know, as important as video is, it doesn't always, you know, provide the magic key that unlocks the door and answers all the questions. I think we as a society still have to come to a point where we can sort of bridge some of these gaps and some of these divides that have people retreating to all these sort of, you know, adversarial corners. And you get situations like these happen, and then everybody wants to run to their corner before they, as the caller says, before they take the caution of, you know, learning all the facts. And that's something that needs to change.
But there is it's easy to see this as a trend because we're seeing the reports more often. I want to go to Devin in Charlotte, who brings up this point. Devin, can you hear me?
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Sure, thank you for calling.
I think there's a bigger picture here that needs to be looked at. The fact that in state after state, city after city, case after case, where there has been substantial evidence that police officers have acted unreasonably, and then they followed by all the acquittals and no accountability by the courts or the police in reference to those shootings. Coupled with the fact that you see all the social media that's out there right now with people having availability of cameras and video, brings to light the fact that since this has been happening for decades, and it's accepted and understood it's been happening for a long time. It's just been the social media that's brought it to the fore. The fact that I know it's very unfortunate these police officers lost their lives, but unfortunately, it takes this extreme escalation of this issue for action to be taken. And I think this is indicative of the police and the courts not taking responsibility in dealing with these issues long before this. And it's a matter of they've made this status quo that the rest of us aren't willing to accept.
Now, Devin, let me ask you this question. I understand your point, and it's one of the most complicated parts of this issue. But I'm just going to push back on this one thing or ask you this question.
Sure.
But the juries did decide in these acquittals. The juries who see all of that evidence made that decision. And I'm not saying whether these decisions are right or wrong, but I wonder your thoughts on whether or not there does come a point where if it's a jury, then we have to accept what they say, whether or not we like it.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. I mean, we definitely don't want to undermine a court system, but I think there's a larger issue at root here. Why is it that that these cases are being decided in an acquittal direction or a not guilty direction? Is it that there's too much of an umbrella or of protection for law enforcement to get away with these types of things? That's what I wonder.
Well, let me stop you right there. Thank you for your call, Devin. Eric, you want to say something?
Well,
on this?
I think he's on to an important point here. A lot of the frustration that's building up out in the community is because of what he's talking about, that people see these cell phone footages and they see what they think is a clear case of misconduct by an officer, but it goes to trial and the judge outlines the law to the jury and here's the standard. And the standard is almost always, did that officer reasonably believe that he or others were in imminent danger? And that's the use of deadly force standard. Now, people disagree about what's reasonable in those cases. And so you have one set of people who believe one thing is reasonable, another set who believe a different standard is reasonable. And so that's why you have this disconnect between what people are seeing on these videos and what juries ultimately do. Now, one of the things that I've heard that makes sense is perhaps we need to look at what the standard is.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe instead of reasonable belief of imminent harm or imminent danger, which is a subjective thing that the officer subjectively makes right there on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
And we, for good reason, have given officers kind of wide berth because, you know, they're the guy that we put in that position to make that call and give them that badge and give them that gun. But some people have said maybe we need to consider a necessity standard. If you have necessity, meaning that you have tried every other avenue and of necessity, there is no other choice but deadly force. The Justice Department actually advises that as a standard that officers should use, but they're not in charge of local police departments and local and state departments, you know, have their own mm-hmm. rules.
And Nick, you're nodding your head in agreement.
Well, to Eric's point and to the point of our caller, it's interesting that some of the police officers who go on trial, like Officer Carrick, like at least one of the police officers in Baltimore involved in the Freddie Gray incident, aren't convicted or acquitted. They end in mistrials because mm-hmm. a jury can't make a decision. And so I think that's what is most frustrating for the community because there's just not an answer. But I think that goes back to the point that even amongst a jury, it is so subjective and it's hard for a jury to even come to a unanimous decision. And that doesn't help the situation either.
Now, one of the bigger ramifications of all this is broader than those people who are directly involved. There's this prevalent sense of fear or just misunderstanding of what's going on. I want to take a call from Joseph in Charlotte. Joseph, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you for having me. The fear you were speaking of. This morning, I left to go to work, and my wife hugs me, and she's crying because she doesn't want to let me go. She's fearful that I won't come back. And I have the same fear for my son, who is 14. He's big. He looks like he's 18. And I fear that, you know, if something goes down and the police are called, that he may not come back home to me. It's a broad fear in our community right now.
And Joseph, if you don't mind me asking, are you African American?
Yes, sir.
Is this fear higher now? Is it more prevalent now than it was in the past, or has it always been there?
It definitely is higher now because of what Nicola mentioned before of the accountability factor. When criminals commit crimes, they go to jail. When cops commit crimes, they don't. So, you know, they're allowed to get away with it. Why stop?
All right, Joseph, thank you for your call. I also want to hear from Albie and Matthews. Albie, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for receiving my call. I am an immigrant. I live in this country for 15 years, in Charlotte, 15 years. I'm from Costa Rica. And I want to say I feel safe. I have felt safe the entire time I've been here. But to see what is happening in the last 2 years over and over on the news, it's very heartbreaking. I have a son. He's 11 years old, and I don't know what to tell him when he is watching the news, and all we see is those videos. Those things that police officers somehow abuse authority, and they are not accountable for.
Okay, Albie, I understand your point. Thank you for the call. The other side to this, and it's important to remember all the sides to this, and there are multiple sides to all of this, is that the police say, and they feel, they are accountable. They are being watched as well. There's internal affairs. There are investigations. There are all things that we see in the aftermath of these kinds of shootings. Is it – this is a strange question, but is it enough? Are they transparent enough about those processes? Do people know that the police are being policed?
I think that the phrase that we keep hearing over and over is this trust gap happening right now, and that's becoming it's a phrase I heard it all morning when different reporters were talking about what's happening, and I think it's a real problem on both sides. There's just this huge lack of trust, and I don't know where you begin to address that.
And, you know, these protests are continuing. We're just seeing news now on Twitter that there's a protest planned in front of the headquarters of Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department Saturday night at 6. These protests will continue. And one of the things that's interesting is it's easy to see how a police officer could feel like it's now turning into an us against them, us being the civilians they're supposed to protect. But it's still easy to see the other side of that, to understand the side of the protesters. You know, we know in Charlotte there was cops and barbers, right? There was this community outreach to try to get better community relations. Is that starting to fray?
Well, I think you raise a good point in that you don't – this doesn't have to be an either-or thing. And I think people are mistakenly making it that if you believe that that young black men should not be taken, their lives shouldn't be taken in these questionable circumstances, that does not then mean that you believe it's okay to open fire on police officers. It's not inconsistent to believe one is wrong and the other is also wrong, and I think we just really need to get to a place where we can have more of those situations where people are coming together, like in the cops and barbers programs. We need more of that because I've heard from so many people who've been involved. My barber actually was involved in that, and I've heard from him and from so many other people who were involved in that just the fact that they could speak with police officers person to person. And, you're not dealing with this abstraction, but you're dealing with another human being who also is afraid in some cases and wants to get home to his or her family as well. And you can see where you have places where you're concerned about the same thing ultimately, which is people being safe. I think if we can just have more of these types of dialogues, more. We just need more.
Hillary.
And going off what Eric said, remembering both sides are human. There was one report on Morning Edition this morning about an intern in Dallas captured this photo in the hospital in Dallas of two police officers just completely distraught, comforting each other. And I think that photo will resonate with people and remind people that both sides are human. And going back to what we were saying earlier, that videos bring this to life, so do photos. They're not just statistics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you look at the video from the Minnesota case and the police officer, where the woman live streamed it afterwards, and the police officer still has the gun,
still drawn,
in the car, but you hear in his voice when he says, you know, I told him not to do it. I told him. He sounds like he's just totally overcome with emotion, barely able to keep it together at that point. And that's not what people stereotypically think of cops in that kind of situation as being. This is a guy who realizes that this is the worst day of his life, either because he had to kill a guy because he had no choice, or because he just made the worst mistake of his life. We don't know yet, but you know, he's a human being in a terrible situation and has caused harm to other people, and he's obviously upset about it.
And, you know, one of the things that was brought up here in Charlotte, again, after the Randall Kara case, was police training. I want to go now to a former law enforcement officer, Don, in Charlotte. Thanks for the call, Don.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. What I wanted to say was the huge, huge difference in how police officers are trained. I know newer rookie police officers, and I know the huge lack of funding that all the departments have put forward into not only vetting the officers and making sure that they don't have a background, or they don't have mental health issues, or they don't have personality issues, and then teaching them de-escalation techniques and how to be a community officer, because the department don't give the funds to train, the officers are now in emergency mode of keeping the animals in the zoo instead of, these are people in our community and we're here to serve and protect them.
Well, let me stop you there, Don, and ask this. We just spent, what, $4.3 million here in Charlotte buying body cameras for officers, something close to that. Every officer now is supposed to be, you know, that's on patrol is supposed to have one of these on them. Do you, in your opinion, do you think that money would have been better spent using teaching de-escalation or doing any other training?
I think it needs to be a combination of both. I mean, we've seen time and time again where we've had videos either from a dash cam or a body cam or civilians who have videotaped and have evidence of what happened. And it doesn't matter because of the systemic racism in our system, and especially in our police department. Doesn't matter how many videos you have, if you don't have the training to keep them from shooting our citizens, it's not going to matter.
All right, Don, thank you for your call. I want to go now to Rob in Charlotte. Thanks for your call, Rob. Rob, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, thank you so much. Everybody's hit some really good points, and a lot of the points that I was going to make myself. It's a very sad situation, but one of the major things, and I had a discussion with, I'm a white male, and I happen to have a lot of friends in my workforce that are happen to be African-American.
Rob, I'm going to have to stop you. I'm sorry, just for a second. Let's take your call after the break. You're listening to Charlotte Talks here, the local news roundup on 90.7 WFAE.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Bradley, formerly Bradley Arendt Bolt Cummings, a full-service law firm serving business litigation needs locally and across the nation. The name has changed, but dedication to serving clients and communities remains. Bradley.com. Coming up in 20 minutes on the Diane Rehm Show, the news roundup continues with the latest on the fatal police shootings in Dallas overnight, as well as the fatal shootings of African-American men by police this week in Baton Rouge and Minnesota. Congress, meantime, questioned the FBI director this week about his decision not to recommend charges against Hillary Clinton over her use of a private email server. And they'll have a look at the latest employment numbers coming out this morning. A panel of journalists will join guest host Indira Lakshmanan for analysis of the week's top national news stories. Coming up at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show after Charlotte Talks, here on 90.7 WFAE.
The majority of St. Helens, England, voted to leave the EU. Some said they did it because there are too many immigrants. But in its sister city in Germany, some say there aren't enough.
So we have a lot of business to do, but we have not enough people to do the business.
I'm Molly Wood, why these two sibling cities have such different views on the EU. That's next time on Marketplace from 8 p.m.
Tonight at 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE, listener-funded public radio.
This is Charlotte Talks Local News Roundup. I'm Tom Bullock in for Mike Collins. I'm joined in studio today with Eric Frazier from the Charlotte Observer, Hillary Burns with the Charlotte Business Journal, Nick Oxner with WBTV, and my colleague Lisa Worf of WFAE. We're talking police, community relations, and trying to take a big picture look, try to make sense of everything that's happened in the last week when it comes to police shootings and now the targeting of police in Dallas. We're taking phone calls. This is a first for the News Roundup. We want to hear from you. 704-926-9323. Think about how you feel about community relations with the police. Are they getting better? Are they getting worse? What can be done to improve them either way? I want to actually go back now to our caller that was on the air, to Rob in Charlotte. I'm sorry about the break there, but let's continue with your thought.
No problem. I appreciate it. Thank you very much, Tom. Just a couple things. The previous caller, Don, had a really good point about diversity training, and it's really not emphasized enough for sure. And I think the breakdown, a lot of the things, I don't think there's a lot of racist cops out there. I just think there's a lot of officers that don't understand other cultures and mannerisms and just the way everyday life. And so there's a fear in how you're supposed to react. I've been through 1,000 simulators, and you know, when you come up to a vehicle and somebody may have a water bottle in their hand, you have to react in a second. Is it a gun they're pulling up fast or a water bottle?
All right, so let me stop you there, Rob, for a quick question. Sure. You're talking about a police simulator. Are you an officer?
Former, 11 years, federal law enforcement.
Okay, continue with your thought.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where you're trained to try to make a quick judgment. So I think, you know, not understanding the other side and not doing enough community policing and not understanding enough about diversity is a huge factor. But I think that needs to be emphasized more than the way media is portraying this right now. When these two shootings happen, you know, it's when there's a white officer on a white subject, it's an officer shooting. When it's a black officer on a black subject, it's an officer shooting. But when it's a white officer on a black subject, it just immediately goes to, he made a racist decision to kill somebody. And that's what it feels like from the media standpoint to me. And I think one of the things that brought it to light was last night having a conversation with a couple of my friends who happen to be African American. And one of the guys told me that his son of 11 years old saw these videos and then looked at him and said, you know, do black people have a target on them? And he didn't know how to answer that. You know, are black people bad? Do they have a target on them? And it was a heart-wrenching thing for a young kid to not understand, but just see what's going on in the media, not understand all the other intricate things that happen that come with it. I don't think there's a lot of racist cops out there that are going to kill somebody because they don't like another culture. I just don't think people understand one another.
All right, Rob, thanks for your call. It's an interesting point. Now I'm going to give you another perspective on this, which is going to come from Nathan from Charlotte. Nathan, you're on the air.
Hey, I'm wondering why the police just can't be nice right up front. I remember riding on my bicycle past the Lynx line, and they walked up to this guy on the, I know you're supposed to have a ticket. Instead of being polite and saying, hey, can we see your ticket? The first thing they said was, let me see your ticket. They weren't polite or nice at all.
All right.
And even my own instant, I was straddling the fence at an affair downtown one time. Instead of being polite and said, could you get down? You don't need to be up there. They said, get off that fence right now.
All right.
Why are they like that? Why can't they be nice first instead of instantly like that? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks for the call, Nathan. And that's the different perspective, although obviously it's a lesser issue. It's still the same kind of core concept, which is the stance of police in the public, how they interact with people.
Yeah, yeah. I think the previous caller,
Robin
Sherland,
yeah.
Yeah, I think he's got a good point there in that. Everybody, we all interact with police officers in some way, shape, or form at some point in your life, even if it's just, you're speeding or what have you. And everybody has encounters with that one police officer who maybe was having a bad day and came off really brusque and abrupt and maybe even rude. And I think there is a basic sort of quality control thing, training thing that police departments do struggle with, that they do try to get all of their officers to behave in this uniformly polite, customer service oriented, you know, sort of mode when they're dealing with people, you know, just citizens in the public, and not, you know, like an active, you know, criminal crime in process kind of thing. But police officers are just human beings too, and they may be having a bad day. I'll never forget one officer who was, I actually did not come in contact with this officer, but he was behind me at a stoplight in a patrol car in uniform, and I didn't pull, well, he wanted to turn right, and I was going to turn right, but the light was red, and I didn't want to do that in front of a police officer because who knows? And he wanted me to turn red, and he wanted me to turn on red. And he was in the back, you know, gesticulating really wildly. His face was red, like, you know, come on, get out of the way, that kind of thing. And it scared the living daylights out of me. And he never did anything except he was back there really worked up. People do not like to see police officers worked up in uniform. That's a scary thing. And so police departments are working on that. I just think, you know, it's a quality control, human beings, sometimes they have a bad day kind of thing.
Lisa.
One of the things that struck me, we were talking about cops and barbers before, and then Police Chief Rodney Monroe, who was leading this meeting, really stuck out to me. He said to the crowd, he said, if you have a problem with what an officer has done, make a complaint. He was basically pleading with people, say, don't keep this to yourself. We want to know as a police department what's going on. And they have some system, you know, obviously to kind of have these, you know, complaints rise to the top. But it was an intriguing moment for me. You don't hear that.
I want to go to Ivy in Gastonia. Ivy, you're on the air.
Yes. The point I think that a lot of people miss out on is number one, let me say this. I support the Black Lives Matter movement. And that movement isn't about retaliation or violence in any way. And the tragedies of yesterday completely undermine any progress that we try to make to mend any strifes or anything negative between cops and communities of color. But I think that one thing that frustrates communities of color or people of color or minorities in situations like what's happened in the past few days is that you don't see multitudes of police officers holding their fellow officers accountable when tragedies like this happen, or when police officers do overstep their bounds.
So, Ivy, when you say that, do you mean that they don't speak out and say this was a bad shooting, this was a mistake? They just
exactly. I mean, you know, me being a supporter of Black Lives Matter, I speak out against you know, negative things that Black people do, or speak out against, you know, the killing yesterday, the murders of the police officers yesterday. As well as speaking out against injustices against the systemic racism or injustices against the Black community. And I think that kind of forms a wall between healing, between getting over this, between trying to make relationships better, is that when you don't have officers come out and speaking up against fellow officers who clearly in some situations overstep their bounds, it almost is more like silence is consent.
All right. I understand your point, Ivy. Thank you very much for your call. It's an interesting – let's talk about the last phrase he used, silence is consent. That's pretty powerful.
Yeah, he's got a point. I think you did see that, though, in the Carrick case where the police department brought charges against one of its own.
Yeah, and now Chief Kerr Putney – was right there in front. I mean, the in Charlotte, at least, it's true that they spoke out pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And then a jury couldn't, you know, they didn't convict him.
Yeah.
And then he has also said, you know, that case tore his department apart,
yeah,
too. So lots of things going on under the surface.
Now, obviously, there's another aspect to this, the literal lens with which all of these shootings, all of these incidences are being portrayed to the public, and that is media coverage. And how we, the media, portray these things. I want to go to Robbie in Charlotte. Robbie, you're on the air. Hi, Robbie, are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you today?
I'm fine, thanks. What are your thoughts?
I've just been listening to NPR's favorite station all day, all night, noon. But, you know, we talk about juries, we talk about systemic racism. When the shootings happened in Louisiana and Minnesota, I listened to NPR yesterday, and yesterday it was all Trump, all Hillary, all day. You know, it was small little tidbits of it. Diane Rehm had a small segment on it, you know, but the social media was blowing up. Now when the shootings happened in Dallas, oh, my God, it's horrific. It's terrorism. It's systemic. A jury can't convict because the things that they hear, oh, it was just two, you know, black men, they were killed, you know, thugs, he had a this, that. But then when something happens in another community, it's almost like the adjectives change. It's horrific. It's tremendous. It's heartbreaking. But when it happens, it's heartbreak on the African-American side. You know, no one gets the pictures of the mothers standing there, you know, crying. I'm a mother of a 28-year-old son and a 21-year-old son. Yet again, I had to have the conversation with them. I work with a bunch of great men, and I am so afraid because they can be taken, whether they comply, whether they don't comply. They can just be taken, and everyone, oh, I'm fearful. I was fearful. I feared for my life. He looked like he was. She looked like, and I'm going to make this point, and I'm going to go. Noble, he was just on your show this morning. He's some type of law enforcement thing. And his point was, what I took out of that, it's midnight, and there's two men on the street, an African-American and a cop. Now, the cop, the way he described it, like the cop is doing such a heroic job, doing great things, and the black man, well, you know, we have to watch over. The systemic, the undertones are so horrible, the way we say things, the way we look at people.
Okay, Robbie, I understand your point. And no, you're fine. Thank you for the call. So, panel, you know, that's a tough question. Are we giving more media attention to Dallas than we are to these other incidents? I do have to say, obviously with Dallas, you're talking about snipers,
yeah,
targeting officers. Yeah. And perhaps, you know, she may have a point that unfortunately the killing of African-American men in these kinds of incidents, you know, it statistics show it's not happening more often, but the coverage seems to be de-escalating because it's almost like, oh, unfortunately there's another one, but it's not as new and different.
Well, I think I totally understand and sympathize with her, with the pain I hear in her voice. Mm-hmm. As an African American man, I share those same concerns that she voiced, hearing from her African American male friends. But as also a member of the media, I do feel like we have a really heavy responsibility right now because this is such an inflamed situation right now that if the media handles this in an irresponsible way, we can really lead people, push people, pull people into some bad areas. I was actually just looking a minute ago at the cover of today's New York Post, for instance, where their headline is Civil War.
Wow.
Four cops killed at anti-police protest. That's irresponsible. That's way more inflammatory. So we do need to do better in the media.
All right, we've got about 5 minutes left. I want to quickly go to Dash in Rock Hill. Dash, you're on the air.
Good morning. I would like to advocate the historic Quaker position of that there's that of God in all of us, which starts out, I think, as the root of all of it, that every life is sacred. And bigotry and racism all emanates from trying to mitigate that one basic important part that all life is sacred. It's black lives, policemen's lives, police women's lives. Anybody has a sacredness to their existence. And I wish I heard more voices saying this is what we need to advocate, so that when a police officer sees a black man, he sees a sacred unit of life. And when a black man sees a police officer, that he sees a sacred unit of life that is worthy of respect and dignity. And maybe that would help solve some of the issues that seem to be so prominent and prevalent right now, because all of those lives are a tragedy.
All right, Dash.
Are just a simple tragedy.
Thank you for your call. And that's very
Thank
much
you.
To the point you were making, Eric. Let's go ahead and hear from Mike in Charlotte. Mike, you're on the air.
Taking my call. I just want to, I had an incident, actually. I have an office near the light rail. And this came up in a couple calls earlier.
I need you to make it brief, Mike. I'm sorry, we're almost out of time.
Sure. Well, there was a bike-mounted officer who apprehended a young African-American man accompanied by two other young men. And when the one officer in question had, you know, the suspect down and was handcuffing him, the other two guys, instead of, you know, they didn't get out their cell phones and maintain a respectful distance. They circled this officer menacingly, and it really just looked like they were just looking for an opportunity to rush this officer. Okay. And when a backup came, they scattered. I just don't know why they would act that way.
All right. Thank you for your call, Mike. And that's, again, part of why this is a complicated issue. Both sides, you can see points from both. This was a little bit of a different local news roundup, but I want to thank our panelists, Nick Oxner, Eric Frazier, Lisa Worf, Hillary Burns. We have a ton of topics we didn't get to this week. We'll try